Good evening, people of the place we call Seattle and Little Saigon, which is a neighborhood in Seattle. It's Sunday evening. It's September the 8th. It's nearly 9 o'clock. That's kind of insane. Almost 9 p.m. here in Little Saigon, Seattle, and yeah, no thunderstorms tonight so far, though I'm holding out hope because that will allow me another kind of stream of consciousness rant, and I will position the recorder better this time. I will. That's a good microphone, but I didn't have it positioned well for that thunderstorm. And that's okay. The first topic I want to discuss is the fact that some people in my life, all of whom mean quite well, they care about me, are a little concerned about my recent professional decisions and also want me to get on board with projects and get going. And here's the deal. I am circling the drain in a sense. I'm not actually in a bad place right now, but I am kind of in a place where I really don't want to commit to anything nor get suckered into something that could be a terrible commitment. It's not to say that I don't trust people, but I'm kind of in a place where I need to back away from that. But at the same time, I need to have those people in my life. So it's a tension. It's a tension situation. It's hard for me. I am trying to reconstitute myself because no matter how well, and this is so important, no matter how well a contract worked out at a place like Microsoft or Amazon or Google or any of the big software companies, and at this point I would contend all the software companies because the weird pod people philosophy is pretty much everywhere now, everywhere in this country, every tech shop, it's ridiculous. I can stomach about 5 or 6 months of it, and that's an ideal situation, like where I'm working with really cool people, like this last project. But realistically, in terms of the negative energy I get from a place like Microsoft, anything past 6 months, and I just really just can't deal. I just can't deal with it. And then if you add into it some weirdness, like for example, the job I had at that local airline, the dude would touch me physically in a way that was totally inappropriate. But the problem was, is that I wasn't a 25-year-old girl, excuse me, young woman. I wasn't a 25-year-old young woman. I was basically a 50-year-old man. And so nobody gives a fuck if some weird Asian gay dude, who happens to be a software engineering manager touches in an inappropriate way a 50-year-old man. But this is not what happened this time. What happened this time was I simply got sick of it. And I've spoken about this before. I'm not perfect, folks. One thing you need to keep in mind, if you tune into my podcast because you think I'm going to give you some special secret wisdom about, you know, making big money in the market or becoming rich or how to get ahead at your job, you tuned into the wrong fucking podcast. I might give you whimsical suggestions, but none of these things would ever be recommended. Yeah. Anyways, I'm doing okay, folks, but if you want to know, do I have some big project planned? My big project right now is to get back to writing. And to do that, and then also to look for another job. But maybe a Joe job. Maybe a job that gives me enough money to keep myself alive. I don't know. That number isn't huge, but it's not finite, and it's mostly a function of how good I am at budgeting. But yeah, I might just go for a Joe job. I really don't know that it matters. I think people are, I don't know, people got some strange ideas about the present and the coming future. And I'm simply being honest. I don't want to be all dark. That's another thing too, folks. I'm in a really dark place right now. If you haven't noticed from recent podcasts, I'm in a really dark place. Yeah, I'm in a really dark place. And there's a part of me that says, Dan, I know you're a Christian and I know you believe in God. And I do. I believe in God. I'm a Christian. But I also know, because I went to church today, and it's important to try to go to church if you're a Christian. And first, you have to find a good church. Actually, our pastor is really good at pointing out there are a lot of places that do all the things. He talks about the attendance, the buildings, and the cash. They do all the ABCs of having a church, but there's no spirit there. And so it's not easy to find a church, but if you've found a church, you should try to go. You're part of that community. It's a faith community, and in many ways, it's more than a faith community, but it is a community of the spirit. So try to go. So I went today. But the fact is, in terms of the current topics, which is the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount, I'm not living the kingdom life most of the time. I am filled with a lot of darkness, and that darkness partly is who I am. And the thing is, Pastor Tim is good about pointing out that not all of us are happy, shiny people, and God loves the people that aren't necessarily happy, shiny. Like people like me. God's okay with people like me, but the truth is, I have a lot of morbid feelings about the coming future, even if it isn't as bad as what Guy McPherson describes, which is pretty freaking terrible. Even if it isn't that bad, it looks really, really bad. And I'm not really sure if people understand that we're not just facing one challenge. It's not just that the human race faces really what is rapid ecosystem collapse. It's not just that. It's not just that we're facing a poisonous atmosphere or that oxygen levels are eventually going to go down. Oh yeah, I hate to break it to you, but the things that make the oxygen, we're killing them. We're killing that whole chain of life. But truthfully, even if we weren't facing these ecosystem challenges, we have the challenge of an economy, of a system of economics that is very much based upon consuming tomorrow today. And I don't want to go into that right now because that's a separate topic, but yeah. So I don't know what to tell you, folks. Next topic. I'm going to switch topics because I feel like I beat that one to death. I'm in a dark place right now. Christ does not like it. I do serve Christ, but I gotta be blunt, I am working on it. As far as sinning goes, I'm working on my sins. If you want me to tell you that I never hang out with Leviathan, if you want me to tell you that I don't drink too much, sometimes I drink too much. Last week, after I just, well, yeah, it is sort of like last week now, but more than a week ago now, when I decided for health reasons to resign my current contract, it did make it a little bit worse in one way. There was a lot of tension built up, but I'm actually feeling pretty good. And I've got a few months of survival saved up. So, am I likely to be in trouble anytime soon? No more than the rest of you. So, let's leave that topic there. Let's switch topics to something more interesting. So, you may not know this, but my dad literally grew up during the Great Depression, which means for my generation, the X generation, my dad was kind of old for a parent. I mean, the bottom line is he got married when he was 36 and he ended up having eight kids. His Catholic minister told him and his wife Vera, you can use the rhythm method. It's guaranteed to work. The Pope says so. So Vera and George mark the calendar for the monthlies, the menses, the visiting of the new blood moon. And they only had 8 kids. But that's the joke. They practiced the rhythm method and they only had 8 kids. But my dad was old, and that means he had a lot of old-timey sayings. In fact, you know, my mom wasn't so bad. She was a little closer to the mark as far as age cohorts go. But yeah, my dad, he had some funny old-timey sayings. And one of the things he would say a lot is stuff's going down the tubes. Now, I think I've mentioned this before, but I do believe this topic is worth revisiting, because this phrase, going down the tubes, it harkens to some ancient madness, some ancient disaster, something on the periphery of our understanding of that chaos that resides between rage and envy. It is the ancient chaos of that part of the human spirit that's been around since Sodom and Gomorrah. It is the ancient madness that Lucifer takes advantage of. So yeah, my dad would use the phrase going down the tubes. And when I think about it, it kind of makes me think, like, what if back in the olden days, they basically had a system of tubes, a system of tubes that were connected to some open area dump near the rivers, near the swamps. They had a system of tubes all over the cities and all over the towns. The tubes had one purpose. They were roughly the diameter of the average human body. Yes, it's true, there were larger tubes for larger people, but most of the tubes had the diameter of the average width, shoulder to shoulder, of the human body, plus 17 inches. And so, yeah, I think that people would die, like Grandma Rosarita or Grandma Rachel or Grandma Jenny would die. Grandma Jenny dies, and it's like, oh, crap, oh, dearly Lord, Grandma Jenny's dead. It's terrible. Grandma Jenny has given up the ghost. Yeah, so Grandma Jenny gives up the ghost, and now it's time to say goodbye, so they throw her down the tubes. And so if you would say things are going down the tubes, it was like, yep. It was almost not just a statement of decay, but almost a threat. Like, my dad was basically saying, Dan, if you don't get your shit together, you're going down the tubes. You think we destroyed the tubes after the Jembulek War of 1872? That was the war in which we enslaved the people of Chief Seattle and built the prison camp on Blake Island. This prison camp would be run by Princess Cruises. Yeah, so anyways, I think that was a funny phrase. Like, I imagine these giant tubes and just people would die. Maybe they would just get sick, or maybe people just got tired of other people, so they threw things down the tubes. It's like, I'm kind of tired of my wife. I'm going to send her down the tubes. I don't really like my husband. He's going down the tubes. I know this is horrible, but yeah. My dad was a logger, too. I think I told the story once of how he tried to make me and my brother feel better by him telling the story of a logger who cut off his arm with a chainsaw, but managed to drive the Cedar Woolley General Hospital where they sewed it back on. And I'm kind of thinking that back in the 70s that wasn't quite, you know, technologically feasible, but I could be wrong. Next topic. So in a previous podcast, I referenced a Native chieftain from the Amazon. So not Native American, a Native chieftain from the Amazon had a public letter to all the people and whatever. And one of the ways he would describe fiat currency. Okay, so fiat currency is the currency that's essentially produced by saying this is worth something. That's what fiat means, to declare something to have value, to say, hey, this is worth something. So the US dollar is fiat currency. There's nothing backing it up. You could say full faith and credit, blah, blah, blah. But folks, whatever you want to believe about full faith and credit, on the back of every greenback is written in Latin, in blood, ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance. I know I say that a lot. There's a reason for it. But what this chieftain would call the paper script, this fiat currency, and I didn't describe it correctly. He would call them sad leaves. Like, you know, leaves from a tree. Sad, as in sadness. Sad leaves. And actually, that makes a lot of sense. Now, does that mean I don't have any sad leaves on hand? No, I do. Frankly, most of you should not be keeping much in your checking account. If you're actually an optimist, like if you actually believe we're going to avoid an ecological disaster and not become extinct, if you're an optimist, you should literally be buying gold and silver right now. You should literally be keeping some extra greenbacks, I mean sad leaves, on hand. Because this banking system, no matter what happens next, is about to collapse. It can't work. It won't work. And no amount of machine guns or threats is going to make it work. The economy is crashing. Okay? The ecosystem is crashing. All this stuff might be survivable, but there's going to be a crash. Anyways, one of the things about this whole sad leaf thing is the problem with the way economics works today. You know, when I was in school, they taught microeconomics and macroeconomics, and microeconomics was generally about what I would call the core rules of traditional free enterprise economics. In some sense, microeconomics is about the economic situation of businesses and people in relationships to consumption on a personal kind of peer-to-peer level. You could say that's microeconomics as well. Macroeconomics is really about mostly Keynesian bullshit. Like, you could contend that microeconomics covers subjects that, and I don't know if this is, I think this is Rothbard, it could be Mises, but I think Rothbard discusses this concept of catalaxy, this notion of an emergent set of relationships, and it's a way in which he describes essentially what agorists describe the natural market. And so microeconomics deals a lot with the natural market. There's nothing natural about macroeconomics. It deals with a lot of bullshit. A lot of Keynesian spend it now bullshit. And here's the problem, folks. No matter how much you want to believe it, you cannot consume tomorrow's food. I know you want to believe it. I know that Paul Krugman or Nancy Pelosi or frankly Donald Trump will come out and say we need stimulus. And I promise you, when that next big horrible event happens, and believe me, they're working on it right now, when that next big event happens, they're going to tell you exactly what Laura Bush said. Go out and shop. Go out and shop for some clothes. That's how you prove you're free. Go out and buy some shit at Target or Forever 21. Go out and shop. Yeah. But people don't have any money, so... And I keep calling it money. It's not money. It's fiat currency. It is a sad leaf. You can't consume tomorrow's food. I know this is a complicated topic for a lot of Marxists and Keynesians. I think neocons are all psychopaths, so they simply don't care. But for a lot of Marxists and neoliberal fucks and modern monetary theorists, they want to believe you can consume tomorrow's food. Folks, you can't. You really can't. I mean, you can in the sense that you can use tomorrow's resources today, but you're going to pay the price. You will eventually pay the price. And the argument, well, we don't have to worry about paying the price. Folks, even if that's true, someone eventually does. And this is the kind of beggar thy neighbor that is literally generational. Like, literally every generation is recursively beggaring thy neighbor. The next generation is being screwed a little bit more. The baby boomers screwed X-Gen is screwing millennials. Millennials are fucking screwing Generation Z. It's how it's happening. We're all doing things. Essentially, we're all behaving as rationally as we can in a very irrational set of arrangements. And in the process, we're damaging the life, the world of the next generation. There's going to be a coming event, and the day after, they're going to tell you, we need stimulus. We need a government bill. We need trillions. You know, Dr. Mark Faber said many years ago, I don't mean many, more like 4 or 5 years ago, but Dr. Mark Faber about half a decade ago said the following. He said the next time they formally do quantitative easing, the Federal Reserve will do $1 trillion a month in bond purchases. That amounts to about 4 times, more or less, the peak of bond purchases post-Great Financial Crisis. $1 trillion a month would be roughly equivalent to doubling the GDP in terms of bond purchases every single month. More or less. That would be like adding an additional 50% of currency, quote-unquote, to the economy. Of course, to the richest people. But at $1 trillion a month, yeah, some of that's going to slop around and go over the edges, and you're going to get some good old-fashioned consumer inflation. And nobody wants to talk about it. But it's going to happen. And I'll also tell you something else that no one wants to hear, but Americans should hear this. And it might impact whether you go on a diet or not. I think the era of Americans paying very little to eat, which means paying very little to purchase gumbus to shove down our throats and maybe not get cancer from it, that era is coming to an end. For a number of reasons, not the least of which is we've so toxified the life system that we can no longer, I think we're getting to the point where we might not be able to grow crops in any traditional way. We're not quite there yet. We can still come up with weird chemical combinations to grow some really terribly toxic food. That is still true. But the kind of food that keeps us alive and just doesn't give us, you know, cancer and autism and diabetes and dementia, that kind of food is harder to get. It's harder to find. I think that by the end of the year, it will be difficult to hide increases in food prices. Believe me, they will try to hide it. They always do. It's the hamburger substitution effect. In the year 1986, Alan Greenspan was having lunch with Ronald McDonald. Ronald McDonald said, "Alan, you know what your problem is? People expect to have steak, when instead they could have a Happy Meal." "Alan, you know what your problem is? People want to have prime rib, when they could have a quarter pounder with cheese or an El Royale." "You know, Alan, my good friend Dr. Greenspan, you know what your problem is? You need to realize that hamburger is steak. And if you realize that, Mr. Greenspan, you and I can do business, baby." Now, do I know that Ronald McDonald and Alan Greenspan met at some nefarious meeting at some diner in New Jersey in 1986 or rounds about there? I don't know, folks. I cannot prove this, but what I will tell you is hamburger is not steak. And one of the tricks they'll pull on you if we get into a food crisis is they'll say, well, hamburger steak, folks, this Glumbic cube of shimulai, it will be very, very cheap. And then all the other stuff that's actually nutritious, actually good for you, will be some type of scumbus you just paste on it. And so they'll tell you that the frosting, which is really the cake, is the frosting. No, that's the last nutritious food you can get. The glumbus cube will be something terrible. And God knows, well, literally God does know what will be in it. And probably Lucifer knows too. And probably Ronald McDonald. Yeah. Sad, sad leaves, folks. Sad, sad leaves. You know, I keep saying it because it bears repeating. It should be repeated. On the back of every printed Federal Reserve note is written in an ancient Sanskrit, in writing you cannot perceive unless you're on shrooms. On the back of every single Federal Reserve note is written, ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance. Ignore the harm. Ignore what this is doing to the earth. Ignore the fact that the earth is screaming right now. Maybe not literally, although last night was weird, but figuratively. Ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance. Be a good crocodile worshiper. Be a good voter. Keep voting. Believe me, the crocodile loves it when you vote. Voting doesn't actually do anything, but it tells the crocodile you still love it. Yeah. So anywho, we should not consume tomorrow's food, but it's what we've done. I think there's a good chance that we have literally eaten ourselves almost to death. The thing about being such a successful, clever monkey is that unlike the beaver and unlike bacteria, we have not met any natural limits but our own stupidity. Like, if you want to ask, what is the thing that kills the human being? What is the extinction level event? It's all shadow play, folks. It's a lot like a person told me on Halloween 2017, Dan, you're projecting. I was projecting. I mean, I don't think I fully understood that day what I was projecting. I think in reality, it was its own special thing. But the reality is this, people. All your visions of extinction, all your horrible visions of how humans are destroyed, these are all projections of your internal deception of your lie. The most likely cause of our extinction will be ourselves. The most likely cause of our destruction will be us. Here's the thing about the Arctic. I'm going to tell you something. You need to know this because when people say it's no big deal if we lose the Arctic, they're being fucking stupid. The Arctic is a giant air conditioner. It essentially, for a very long time, kept the earth quite nice for us human beings, us clever monkeys. So as long as we didn't fuck with the earth too much, the Arctic was going to keep us from cooking like lobster. It would keep things nice so we could have our civilization and grow our wheat and make bread and beer. Don't forget the beer. I love the beer. But ultimately, we may have fucked things up. And here's the thing, folks. When we discovered highly dense hydrocarbon energy, when we figured out how to use coal and oil and natural gas, we were tapping into a finite reserve of energy that we treated as if it were infinite. So, and also that it had zero consequences. Like literally, when we discovered and started using these energy sources, there were two things we assumed were true. One, there'll be no consequences, and two, this will last forever or as long as we need it to. Well, folks, there's no such thing as a zero-consequence decision. I'm sorry if you want to believe in upside-down, sideways, Walt Disney bullshit reality where girls can become boys and boys can become girls and ultimately compete in high school competitive athletics and win, and yet that's bullshit. Wake the fuck up. We have set ourselves up in a very bad situation. If you ask my opinion, it's tough. Sad leaves indeed. Next topic indeed, yeah. So, one of the things that I think is baked into the cake, and when I say baked into the cake, that is also kind of an old-timey term. You may not be aware of this, but back in the 30s and 40s, it was very popular to bake razor blades into the cake. Yeah. So back in the 30s and 40s, they would bake razor blades in the cakes. And so the whole phrase baked into the cake meant maybe there's a razor blade in there. Of course, I'm joking. But no, baked into the cake. It's like, it, you know, it's in the ingredients. It's baked into the cake. I hope you got that on audio. Anyways, it's baked into the cake, just like that fart that you may or may not have heard. And I'm not, and you know what? That was a methane burst. That's baked into the cake. Anywho, at this point, I think at this point in human history, some type of major economic and social collapse is baked into the cake. I don't think that can be avoided. We might avoid these terrible ecological disasters if we're lucky enough that what we're currently doing comes to a halt. But the sad truth is, if what we're currently doing comes to a halt, you're going to have major social and economic collapse. We are essentially, you know, sometimes this is referred to as the Red Queen syndrome. You're running really fast to keep up with everything that's going on. And you can't stop running. All you can do is run. All you can do is run faster. There's no going backwards. There's no stopping. And I would say that we're in the situation right now with respect to economics in the same situation. So it's sort of like when, like I said in a previous podcast, when Janet Yellen says, I'll never see another recession in my lifetime, that should be a hint, really. That should tell you what she expects to happen if there ever is another recession. So even if we do not face abrupt climate change and human extinction in the next 10 years, as Guy McPherson expects, and he could very well be right, even if that doesn't happen, I think we're facing some major economic and social dislocation that most Americans can barely conceive of. Like, I think most of us have no understanding. My dad grew up during the Great Depression, so probably he saw things that you know, he would be prepared for. But a lot of Americans don't even have the courage to look past their fucking smart device. Believe me, I walk around, I see what's going on around me. I take the bus to church, I take the train to church, I see the villages of homeless people. And as much as you want to rationalize that it's all druggies and crazy people, as much as you want to rationalize that it's all that, the fact is there are families who have fallen off the radar. There are children who have fallen off the radar. You don't need to import sadness to America. If you actually gave a shit about your fellow human being, you can find Americans who need your help right down the fucking street. So social collapse is baked into the cake. And here's the problem with social collapse. It virtually guarantees that at least one of the nuclear reactors in this country is going to cook off. Now you say, well, Dan, why is that? Can't they just, you know, send the army to surround the nuclear reactors to protect them. And yes, that is true. But what the army can't do is prevent a cooling system from failing and thereby causing control rods to melt. The army can't do that. The army can guard your fucking nuclear power plant, but it can't guarantee that the logistic supply chain that provides a backup generator or provides diesel fuel or provides a water pump to keep pumping water so your cooling rods don't melt. Because here's the thing, even if a reactor is scrammed, even if a reactor has its control rods fully inserted, without coolant, without a cooling process, eventually the reactor will heat up and the rods will melt. And once they've melted, that's it. It's done. It's China syndrome. It's Fukushima. It's horrible. So here's the thing. I think social collapse is baked into the cake. And what that also means is that if you're one of these, you know, masters of the fucking universe that most likely, most recently put us in the current predicament, you're probably asking yourself, okay, what now, man? What now? What do I do now? I run the Gambian hedge fund. We have trillions of euros and dollars, yuan and fucking yen under management, trillions. So many trillions and trillions. Yeah. If you're one of these masters of the universe that goes to fucking these special meetings, these fucking Bilderberg bullshit meetings, these fucking economic meetings in fucking Switzerland and shit. If you're one of these people that thinks they run the world, what do? If you know social collapse, A, is baked into the cake. If you know B, social collapse equals logistical disruption. And if you know C, there is one component of every boiling water reactor that cannot fail, and that's the control rods. And you know that during social collapse, the likelihood that shit doesn't fail is zero, which includes the control rods. One of these plants is going to lose a water pump. One of these plants is going to run out of diesel. One of these plants will lose a backup generator. And guess what happens next? No amount of Army Rangers is going to fix it. Period. There is no fix. The reactor will simply heat up, the control rods will melt, and it's a disaster. And it's pretty fucking horrible. And an entire swath of the country becomes, best case scenario, pretty much unlivable for thousands and thousands of years. And that's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario, that event makes everything worse and more of these reactors start cooking off. Because guess what, guys? In a fragile, fucking, overly complicated society, everything is daisy chained together. Everything is daisy chained together. Yeah, so this is the thing. I've talked a lot about this whole idea. If Guy McPherson was right, what would that imply? I mean, logically. And one of the things it might imply, since I can't see any other way out, and it certainly explains the whole Antarctica fetish, it explains the we can't ever have a recession again that Yellen said, because you can't have the fucking aerosols falling out of the sky. And I hate to break to you folks, you get a major recession, economic activity slows, yeah, the aerosols start falling out of the sky. So if Guy McPherson is right, I suppose at one point I thought, well, you know what, the only solution for the truly sociopathic people that run the world would be something like nuclear winter. It basically gives you the ability to prevent the additional methane from boiling off around the Arctic Circle, so it restores the permafrost. It basically kills a lot of people. It probably buys you time with a lot of reactors to properly shut them down. Yeah, nuclear winter. And the problem with social collapse, which is separate, but related to ecosystem collapse, is that you end up with the same answer. Okay, folks? The people that run the world, it isn't necessarily a secret cabal. There aren't necessarily secret handshakes. It could simply be the top 1%. And the top 1%, what does that mean out of 8 billion people? You know? And when I say 1%, maybe it's more like the top one half of one half of 1%. Maybe it's like that. It is essentially a very small group of people. But even if it was 1,000 people or 10,000 people, maybe it's 100 people that control most of the wealth on Earth, it doesn't imply there's some coordinated secret cabal. They're simply the people at the top of the pyramid. And if you think they have a fucking plan, you see, here's the thing, folks. If you're one of these folks who says, oh, there's no conspiracies, blah, 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 well, tell that to every prosecutor, every federal prosecutor who's done a RICO case, that there are no conspiracies, you stupid fuck. As a matter, as a legal matter, there is a huge corpus of U.S. federal law that deals mainly, almost totally, with fucking conspiracies. So, yeah, it's called RICO. Look it up, you fuck. But that's the point, folks. You folks who love to say, hey, no conspiracies. Well, you need to understand their implications to that fucking logical statement. If there are no conspiracies, then guess what, folks? Nobody's in charge of this fucking mess. There is no fucking super wise person or super smart people. And I'll also add something else. These are some of the shittiest people on Earth. These aren't the best. These are the sociopaths who shivved and killed themselves, shivved and killed others to get to the top, or they're the children of people that beat and bullied their way to the top. The bottom line is, in our current crony fucked up system, these are not great people. These are some of the shittiest people that have ever lived. That's the truth. That's how you get to the top in a kleptocracy. That's how you get to the top on a giant pirate ship, is to be the shittiest fucking person you can possibly fucking be. In fact, I don't even want to insult pirates, because I think pirates have honor. So yeah, I kind of think social collapse points in the same direction that ecosystem collapse does, about the only thing the powers that be can do at this point is have a major thermonuclear war. And I'm sorry, I don't believe these are good people, I don't believe they're necessarily wise people, and if you want to be all critical of conspiracy theories, they're not necessarily that fucking organized. But I will say this, they have terrible fucking ideas. They have no lack of really shitty ideas. These are the masters of horrible, monstrous, evil fucking concepts and ideas and plans. So do I think it's within the purview of some of these fucks to say, guess what, it's fucked, we're fucked. Everything's gonna fall apart. Every reactor will cook off. The only play we have left is launch them all. Do I think that's beyond the people that think they run the world? No. Because these are the scumbags that got us here. And they want to pretend they're the ones saving us, but they're the scumbags that got us here. The Bill Gateses, the fucking Tim Cooks, the Bezos, the Zuckerbergs. These are the fuckers who told you to waste money on a lot of technological bullshit for 20 fucking years. And then they would talk out of the other side of their mouth and say, oh, fuck, the environment. And then they have their foundations where they say, we're saving you. We're going to engineer a mosquito to give you a virus. Yeah, these are not good people, folks. So I'm sorry. If you want to think of this in terms of the casino of life, and right now this is a great time to think in terms of casinos, because as I've said in the past, we are in the midst of what you could refer to as the great discontinuity. No, this is not the verge of Ray Kurzweil's singularity. That's a load of bullshit. Yeah, there is no singularity, but there is the great discontinuity. And what that means in very basic, simple terms is that we have a huge set, not necessarily an infinite set, but in terms of probability distribution, you could consider it so. But we have a likely set of possible future functions. And again, they exist. Some of them are okay. Some of them are quite terrible. But frankly, most are quite terrible. Like, the most likely outcomes before us are really terrible. But there are potentially some positive outcomes. You cannot give up on the clever monkey. The clever monkey does come up with safety plans. The clever monkey is sometimes clever enough to save itself. You must say this about the human being. But those islands where the clever monkey saved itself, those possible futures, they're way the fuck out there. And we're going to need a lot of luck. And we'll have to avoid a lot of fucking sharks to swim to that fucking island. So I don't know what the future's going to bring, but what I can tell you is that we live in a time where, if you want to think of it this way, it's very much about Markov properties, which means that if you want to know what the future state of the system is, don't think about 2 weeks ago, think about today. I know that sounds horrible, but it's true. Each day, the probabilities shift. What this future looks like, who knows? Right now, the odds are not pointing in a very good direction, and I'm simply being blunt. And yeah, some of that's my darkness. Some of that's just who I am. I have never been the happy, shiny cheerleader. I mean, I pretended to be at times, but that's never been me. But yeah, the most likely futures that we face right now all look pretty bad. And all of them make nuclear war, as terrible as it is, look like a kind of solution. If you're a sociopath, if you're a narcissistic, demonic, evil piece of shit, and you don't care about most of the people. If all you want to do is save your own ass, go to some bunker in Antarctica, and sit it out for 20 years as we have a miniature ice age, and then shut down the reactors and just prepare yourselves to take over. Who knows? I mean, these people are going to hide in their fucking caves. They're going to go to their collective crawl space and hope to crawl out after this is all done. Of course, they're probably fooling themselves. That's the thing, folks. It could all be too late. You know, all of these ideas, including global thermonuclear war, could be very much too late. I mean, it just literally could be the case, but I just don't honestly know. What I do know is this, is there's a lot of social chaos baked into the cake. If you think you've seen it, if you think it's gotten bad enough and it's not going to get worse, I'm sorry, it's going to get a lot worse. If this is just a normal paradigm shift, if this is literally just like a normal every 500 years reformation type paradigm shift, there's a lot of social stability baked into that cake. You need to study the 100 years after our good friend Martin Luther posted his 95 theses to the door. You need to ask yourself what happened in those 100 years. Those were some rough years. And I'm not blaming Martin Luther, but the Reformation is a good example of a paradigm shift. And folks, best case scenario, we're not looking at the singularity. We're looking at a paradigm shift, and we don't yet know what the future looks like, so we don't know what that paradigm will be. My guess is, if we have any luck, if enough of us can turn to Christ, not everyone, but enough of us, if we can do our best to try to be kinder to each other and embrace peace, I think we have a chance. It's not a great chance. The odds aren't super great, but we have a chance. If we continue down this toxic neocon, FEE.org, everything is A-OK because we have magical number goddesses that can prove to you that despite the poverty you see, it's not really there. If we keep going down the dumping the gumbus into the fucking rivers and killing the seas and acidifying them, if we keep trying to murder Mother Earth, and yeah, I'm a Christian, but I'm going to call it that. If we keep trying to kill Earth, the way we've been doing it, this gift from God, and we're fucked. That is literally baked into the, well, that is baked into the cake. We are fucked. Whatever you want to say about what we've been doing, anyways. Next topic, I killed that one. Last topic actually probably should be. There should be a last topic of the evening. last topic is related, and in some sense, my podcasts recently have had a thread dealing with the environment, the ecosystem, ecology. The reason is I live in this world, and I share the air, water, and soil with all of God's creatures, and you know, I need clean air, I need clean water, I need healthy soil. If I don't have these things, I die. But so do the other creatures. So do the birds and the bees. Have you seen the state of the bees recently? The beepocalypse. There's a beepocalypse, yes. But so I feel I've talked about the orcas. And here's the thing, folks. I like to write, and I have a whimsical Irish spirit. So even when I'm not drunk, although when is that exactly? Even when I'm not drunk, I have a whimsical Irish imagination. But with a dark edge. It's not a normal whimsical Irish imagination where you imagine fairies and magical princesses and little kingdoms of sparkly cutesy things, little fairy kingdoms with little fairy wands. Yeah, I don't, that's not where my whimsical spirit goes, and I'm sorry. I know some of you would like the fairy kingdom stories of the magical princess that kills the dragon. Folks, the dragon eats the princess. The glass is neither half full nor half empty. The glass is fucking broken. That's reality, at least for Uncle Dan. So I've been thinking about the orcas. And here's the thing, folks. When I think about the orcas with my whimsical imagination cap, I imagine that if I were them, I would be really fucking pissed off. I mean, we've kidnapped their children. We've poisoned their waters. We've kind of destroyed their air and filled it with gumbus and other toxins. And to add final insult to injury, we've been destroying the salmon runs. Their source of food is going away. Princess Lutetia of Orca Pod Z28 is giving a presentation to the other orca chieftains. Prince Lutetia points out that within 18 months, all the orcas will be gone in the Puget Sound unless they can come up with a food substitute. And she just met with Ronald McDonald. And Ronald suggested that if you can substitute hamburger for steak, you can substitute human for salmon. And Princess Lutetia presents the idea that it is time for the culling of the humans, that they act so bunctuously in their flatboats and their glimbus tubes, that it's time for the humans to pay a price. Hey, honey, I want to go for a kayaking trip. Is that okay? Are you sure? I'll be back in a couple hours. Oh, yeah, I'll get you a donut or something at that donut shop that's all nice about the gluten. Oh, isn't it nice to be out in the Puget Sound in a kayak on this beautiful... Oh, What's that up ahead? There's something in the water. There's more than one thing. I see a bunch of black fins heading towards me at 10, 20 miles an hour. Maybe I should start kayaking back to shore. Aw, shit, I just got knocked out of my kayak, but I'm sure the kind orcas will save me. That's what the fairy tale book tells me. The orcas grab his name is Philip. His friends call him Phil. They grab Phil by his arms and legs and they slowly tear him apart. Phil is explaining to them that he's a member of the Autobahn Society. And they're trying to explain to him that they don't fucking care. They are enjoying the flesh of Phil, and Phil is now gone. Phil is part of the orca's tummy now. No donuts for Patrice. No coffee, no low-gluten pastries. Her life partner, not husband, because, yeah, that would be too cisgender. Her life partner, Philip, is now gone, and the orcas aren't done yet, baby. Princess Lutetia explains that there's going to be a Jaws film festival in the summer of 2020 near Golden Garden State Park. Oh, those humans and their hubris. Those humans and their hubris. They're going to have a film festival dedicated to the movie Jaws in July 2020 at Golden Garden State Park in Seattle. There's going to be a miniature triathlon. There'll be a swimming competition. It will be out in the Puget Sound for a mile swim. Pod Z47, Pod J16, you need to be ready because we need to eat. Hey, Kelly. Yeah, Jane? Are you gonna be there to cheer me on at the triathlon? Yeah, Jane, I'll be there. I'll be there with all the Je friends that Je we have. And we'll be there with Princelys and Prancies. We'll be all kinds of glancy. It'll be great, Jane. Thank you, honey bunch. This water is cold, but I'm ready to swim hard. All of these male swimmers are so filled with testosterone and gumbus. But I have the menses. That shouldn't be a problem. I'm swimming the Puget Sound. Nothing can harm me here. And I just watched that Jaws movie. So male cis-oriented in its destruction. Don't you know about the aquatic ape theory? Don't you know that dolphin feminine is the dolphin goddess of the ocean? What's that in the water ahead? Oh, I'm gonna get up from my breaststroke. Oh, crap. Is that what I... Oh. Yeah, and Jane and all the swimmers are just torn to pieces by multiple pods of orca whales, and you'll say to me, Dan, how could you let that happen in your whimsical Irish mind? And I would say you're to blame, because you're sitting there thinking to yourself that there are no consequences, that all this fucking bullshit we do is just sort of an empty nothing, that technology will save the day. And what I'm telling you is, some of that might be true, but for every fix we seem to come up with, we seem to create two or three other problems. And the math is not looking good for us. So maybe there is some magical technological fix. Maybe there is some literal equivalent, excuse me, figurative equivalent of what doctors used to do with people who had spinal injury, and that is fusing the back. Maybe there is an equivalent at the planetary scale of fusing the back, of, you know, a short-term fix for a long-term problem. And frankly, that's what geoengineering looks like. Geoengineering looks like the fusing the back. The problem is that when you fuse the back or do the geoengineering shit, you're in what, you know, a mathematician might call the drunken walk. From a probability perspective, your situation just got worse. Even though you did a temporary solution, you solved the problem temporarily, long term, the back is weaker. Long term, because of geoengineering, the climate system is weaker. That's reality, folks. You don't think there are consequences. So maybe the orca whales are not going to start killing kayakers, but frankly, the kayak apocalypse is something I kind of welcome. Not because I want humans to be harmed, but I want them to have a wake-up call. And what better way than to watch the movie Jaws on the beach, and then to go swimming late at night at Golden Gardens on July the 20th, 2020, the year of the clown. And yeah, in the moonlight, you say to yourself, I'm safe. There's just gumbus in the water. There's just red tide. It's Bernie, but it doesn't hurt me. But then you feel the pull. You feel the pull. It pulls you under. The orca whale. And maybe orcas are just too fucking kind. I mean, that's the thing. They seem to be, from study, that they're quite smart. They seem to be very emotionally intelligent, so maybe they're just too fucking kind. I mean, maybe that's the story of the Neanderthal, too. What if the riddle of the orca is the riddle of the Neanderthal? Maybe they were too fucking kind. And in a world of fucking sociopathic, clever monkeys, kindness doesn't really get you very far. I know that's a really dark way of looking at it, so I'm going to close out this podcast and let you know something. There is gold hidden in your home. It is buried where you least expect it. One of your grandparents was a Nazi spy. There's Nazi gold in your basement. So by all means, go check your fucking basement for that Nazi fucking gold.